SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Pro football full circle.
Circling. Oh, look out. Gronkowski didn't have the angle. Touchdown. Aho, Kenyon Drake. A miracle.
Murray heaves it downfield. It is. It's caught. It is caught. DeAndre.
The next hour, getting you prepped and ready for this weekend's action. Some news and notes around the NFL. Steelers wide receiver Diontae Johnson will not be available. He's on the COVID list against Baltimore. Right now, Pittsburgh, a 5.5-point underdog against the Baltimore Ravens this coming Sunday. Joe Burrow, he's out, will not play against the Cleveland Browns. Running back Joe Mixon, he's on the COVID list. Both players are out. This line is ballooned. It did have Cincinnati early on FanDuel as a 1.5-point favorite, now a 6-point dog against the Cleveland Browns and backup Case Keenum. But the news of the day, Scott, came in twofold. One in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, the other one in Tampa Bay with Antonio Brown. We'll jump on the Aaron Rodgers first. He called out Hub Arkush, the Chicago-based reporter that said he's a bad guy, biggest jerk in the league, doesn't deserve to be the NFL MVP. Called him a bum, Aaron Rodgers. And then today, we have Antonio Brown, who waltzed off the field in the win against the New York Jets. People thought he just lost it. He came out yesterday, said that Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Bucks wanted him to play on an injured ankle. He today posted screenshots of a conversation between Bruce Arians and himself saying, "We're not going to rest for the playoffs. We need you all in." I don't know, baby. Something's going on in Tampa Bay, and it ain't good for Tom Brady and the crew.
Yeah, listen, to me, this just shows how much of a bird brain Antonio Brown is. I mean, you talk about biting the hand that feeds you, right? Tom Brady went out of his way several times to get this guy a job in the NFL, gave him a Super Bowl ring, and really, whether you like him or not, enhanced his chances to get into the Hall of Fame. The guy's 21st in receiving yards, 21st in receptions, and 24th. I know it's 21, 24, 24 in touchdowns, receiving yards, and receptions all time. And now he's got a Super Bowl ring. And now you got to go after Tom Brady because of a trainer, and that situation is well thrown into the mix. I mean, listen, every head coach out there, Joe, says, "Come on, guy, let's play, play, play." I mean, we all know that, right? But, you know, if he has records, though, like I think I read, supposedly of his ankle being busted and them saying, "Okay, you got to go play." But you know what? No one's telling Antonio Brown to do anything he doesn't want to do, right? I mean, if it's a lowercase person, you know, less of a personality, maybe he was convinced. But you're not telling Antonio Brown to do something he really doesn't want to do, and he's going to do it just because you said so. No way. So, well, what a dope. I you know, it gets worse for Antonio Brown in my eyes every day.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can look at it both sides, right? Obviously, from the player and the union perspective, this is going to be an interesting argument throughout the offseason, right? And even in the playoffs. How does this negativity surround and really affect the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in terms of, you know, they're going to have to answer questions about it. How does it affect Bruce Arians in terms of not today or this week, but potentially the playoff run? Can this team push it all aside and still maintain their focus and composure, or will it be an off-the-field distraction? The other aspect is, if Antonio Brown just, say, made an impulsive decision, and then is all of a sudden starting to dial it back and say, "You know what? I have to save myself because now I'm never going to get a job in the NFL depending upon what I did on Sunday against the New York Jets." It could be a little bit of both now on both sides, can it, Scott?
Oh, I don't doubt that at all. I think that's exactly what's happening. And I also think that Tampa Bay is not going to release him because they know some team's going to pick him up, i.e. the Dallas Cowboys, who need a wide receiver, i.e. maybe Green Bay. Maybe Green Bay says, "You know what? What the heck? We're going to go all in. We're losing Aaron Rodgers next year, so why not?" I mentioned this, I think, on Monday or Tuesday's show. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have done all the dirty work with Antonio Brown this year, Joe. You know, now is when you need Antonio Brown, right, for the playoffs. You put up with his nonsense in a regular season, knowing knowing, okay, at the end there's a dangling carrot there, and that's the playoffs. Well, they don't have to deal. Whoever picks him up, if they want to, they don't have to deal with his nonsense for 3-4 months. They got him for the postseason. So as much as he's a bird brain, would he help the Dallas Cowboys? Absolutely. You put him on the Green Bay Packers? I mean, my goodness, who'd beat them, right, if you could keep this guy in tune for 4 weeks? So Tampa Bay knows that. They're not releasing him, even though Bruce Arians said he's no longer on the team, but technically he is. And I think that's the root of it all. I he's not making a lot of money. He only made $3 million this year. So it's not about money. It's not about like, okay, Tampa Bay owes me, you know, 5 game checks. That's not it. He's owed next to nothing. It's about Tampa Bay not wanting to release him because they know someone's going to pick him up and they want to keep him in purgatory, even though Bruce Arians made that proclamation on Sunday that he's gone, and he's not gone. So from that aspect, yeah, I kind of feel bad for Antonio Brown. I mean, I am on his side on that side of things.
Yeah, and we'll see. Tampa Bay right now, 8-point favorites at home in the regular season finale against Matt Rhule and the Carolina Panthers. Total in that ballgame set at 41.5, minus 115 to the under. When we come back, Scott and I will get you prepped and ready. We'll dive into that ballgame in Atlanta. New Orleans taking on Matty Ice and the crew, Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel, right here on the grid. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel.
Back on Pro Football Full Circle, Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel talking about the biggest news surrounding the NFL. Just broke down the Antonio Brown situation in Tampa Bay. We'll turn our attention to Atlanta. Atlanta is a 4-point underdog, Anna Holmes, Scott, against the New Orleans Saints. New Orleans did get the victory last Sunday against Carolina, trailed for much of the first half, did pull that ball game out 18-10. They go on the road. Remember earlier in the year, Atlanta knocked off New Orleans. This is when New Orleans was basically healthy. They were hitting on all cylinders. They went down to the Bayou, came out with a victory. I believe it was 29-27. Now they go on the road. This offense has not looked the same since Jameis Winston went out. Taysom Hill, inconsistent. The running game's not there. Kamara's not there. That being said, we know that the Falcons struggle at home, right? Last ball game I believe they played was against Detroit. They got the win but no cover. Give me Atlanta laying a short number here, -4 on FanDuel. I'll take a shot, and I'll take a shot on the over 40 in the dome. I mean, come on. I mean, both of these teams have to explode for at least 45 in this ballgame.
You mean getting 4 with Atlanta? Yeah. Not laying 4. Yeah, getting 4. Okay, she's laying. You know, what's interesting is that they have this game at 4 o'clock. I know it kind of coincides with, well, you know what it is? Because San Fran could get in if the Saints would lose. So they want to make sure that they're both being played at the same time. I thought maybe, you know, if San Fran needed to win, then they probably would have played this game at 1. But San Fran either gets in by beating the Rams or by having the Saints lose. So that's why this is a 4 o'clock game, if you were wondering. So I like the Falcons, too. It's a division game. Last game, they know, no matter what anybody says, you know, teams don't want to lose the last game of the year. You could be Jacksonville, Detroit. You could be Atlanta. You could be whoever. You know, you never want to end the season with a loss. You always want to end the season on a win. So I think you're going to get an honest effort point being from the Atlanta Falcons. They are at home. They have been outgained in their last 11 games, Joe. That's the only concerning thing. But I don't know if the Saints, I'm not a big believer in that stat, but 11 games is 11 games. That's when it's like, okay, it's not a fluky thing. It's not a team that is up big because of turnovers and the other team just happens to be throwing the ball more. Their offense has been bad. I mean, the last few weeks, it is just, if Matt Ryan's, if Ben Roethlisberger is done, then, Matt Ryan is, on that same stove. He's not far from being done either. But I would take a stab at Atlanta plus the 4. That's a big number.
I'm against you. I like actually New Orleans. I just think, I'm laying the 4 here. The reason why I say that is because we talked about it. Atlanta is a better road team than they are at home, right? They do tend to struggle inside the dome, and they struggled with Detroit a few weeks ago. I'm not in love with New Orleans in this ball game, but I still think in this type of situation, they can run the football effectively. To your point about Atlanta being inconsistent, once Patterson got hurt, that offense fell apart, right? And then obviously with the situation with Calvin Ridley, when he did take a leave of absence, that hurt them as well. Defensively, they're starting to wear down. But I mean, 40 points, I mean, typically New Orleans and Atlanta, they always, this game always seems to trend to the over. I mean, 40 points in the dome, can you see both of these teams at least scoring? I mean, 45, 48?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I thought the over last week at home with the Saints in Carolina was a pretty good play just because Darnold was playing and everything else, and then Taysom Hill was back, and that thing didn't go over. That Saints offense is bad. That's why I give the Falcons a chance, because as bad as their defense is and the way they've been outgained, I don't know if the the Saints have the offense to take advantage of that. Although I will tell you, Falcons, 6-15, Joe, at home against the spread their last 21 home games. 6-15. And the Saints are 9-2 against the spread their last 11 road games. So it does, you know, if you want to buy into trends, it's clearly a New Orleans Saints play.
Which, you know, in the college side, I never do, but on the NFL side, you have me biting on this, actually.
Welcome to the dark side.
Exactly. I'm on the dark side. I actually like New Orleans a lot, even though they're laying four. Now, bigger question, Michael Thomas hasn't played all year. Is he in a Saints uniform in 2022? Especially since we know the rift between him and Sean Payton, basically in the offseason, you know it's going to continue. Is he in a Saints uniform, or you think he goes for greener pastures, ask for another team?
He probably won't be, although he is a really good wide receiver. So sometimes you just got to, you know, bite your tongue and put up with his nonsense. But, you know, I don't think he will be. And same thing with Calvin Ridley. You know, that's a story that really hadn't gotten that much publicity. You know, you got a Falcon team that's not good, let's face it. But in the NFC this year, they were still in it heading into last week's game. I mean, no one really kind of talks about him leaving the club, personal reasons. It's amazing how whenever you just say personal reasons, that just shuts off the faucet. Okay. Whatever it is, I don't know, drugs, alcohol, COVID, well, you know, pick one, you know, sickness, you just say personal reasons, he's got some issues to deal with, and that just kind of shuts it off, and you don't even delve into it. But this guy's missed over half the season, you know. You found with the Ridley on one side, Pitts on the other side, you know, Patterson emerging, you know, that shouldn't have been a bad football team this year, but we really don't know what's going on with him.
Yeah, now, you could have made the argument that Atlanta, now I know they went all in on Kyle Pitts at number four, but if they would have potentially went in on, let's say, Justin Fields at that spot. Justin Fields there played his freshman campaign in Georgia, familiar with the landscape. You know, they would have had a go-to type of backup plan in this year with Matt Ryan, right? Now where do you turn? This team did not make a playoff run. All right, granted, they were in the race, but at the end of the day, they weren't winning in a playoff game no matter how much money you put down on it or no matter who they were matched up against. Now what does this team do? You have an aging quarterback. He's broken down as the season has worn on. His weapons aren't there. The deep ball isn't there. They're not as explosive as they once were. Certainly not anywhere near where they were at the start of the season when they won that ball game against Miami and Kyle Pitts broke out. They went down like a dart from that point on. I mean, where do they turn? So are they in the market for a quarterback? Obviously, they have to pick up the old man, but where do they turn here? They have no plan moving forward.
Yeah. Is there a guy, you know, if I told you now, did you see enough from Fields to say, all right, they should have drafted him? I don't know if I have or not. I mean, position-wise and analyze it all, like we said, yes, they need a quarterback. But have you seen anyone, even Mac Jones, you know, who was talked about as being a top five maybe pick? Maybe San Fran was going to grab him, right, with a second or third pick overall. So throw all five of those quarterbacks that were taken, do you think they made a monster mistake going with Pitts, who's obviously showed some promise versus one of those quarterbacks?
I think that if they would have taken Fields, they would have had a nice backup plan, and you could have groomed Justin Fields. You could have put him in with some RPOs, obviously handed the reins to Matt Ryan in terms of this offense, and then allowed Justin Fields to get acclimated. And like I said, utilize him like Taysom Hill. At least you would have had a backup plan. Now they have to start from scratch again. And he would have been a good fit. You know, he played in the SEC. He went to Georgia. Wasn't the right fit with Kirby Smart, and I think you would have sold a lot of seats from the fans' perspective. You know, a lot of Georgia fans back the Atlanta Falcons, so I think that would have been a route to go. Now, granted, Kyle Pitts is panned out, and he's better than what I thought he would have been in year number one. We'll see, I guess, in 2 or 3 years, depending upon what they do with Matt Ryan and where they go moving forward. But at the end of the day, you're not going to win a Super Bowl right here, right now with Matt Ryan.
You know what the problem may have been, Joe, is that Matt Ryan was under contract. He's under contract heading into this year, 3 more years, but in essence, 2 more. The last year, they could get out of it and only have a $15 million cap hit. But they were looking at, you know, drafting a quarterback and having him sit for 2 years because you can't move Matt Ryan. Would have been a $67 million cap hit if they moved him before this year. It'll be a $40 million cap hit if they move him this offseason. So they were locked into him for 2 years, and maybe they're just saying, you know what? Why are we going to draft a quarterback that we're going to have to sit for 2 years? We'll play him 1 year, then all of a sudden we got to make a decision on him in the future. So I think that had a lot to do with them passing on a quarterback.
When we come back, we'll talk about the battle in Mile High. Pat Mahomes taking on Vic Fangio and Drew Locke coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel.
Back on Pro Football Full Circle, we were going to turn our attention to Denver and Kansas City. We'll get into that game in a couple of minutes, but news just came out of ESPN, Scott, where they said that the Bucs will officially be releasing Antonio Brown, and I'm looking right now, it also says that he will not face discipline from the league office for what he did against the New York Jets in terms of that atmosphere. So this is intriguing developments, right? We thought that the Bucs, we just talked, that the Bucs would not release him to give another team an opportunity of a playoff push. But is this now maybe more evidence of, you know, supporting Antonio Brown? And maybe he's right to a degree, and maybe NFLPA is getting involved and putting pressure on the league office?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, I am a genius. It is amazing. I think that's what this all is. I just kidding, sort of. Tell that to my wife all the time. This is what that was all about. You hate to be, gosh, you just hate to be on Antonio Brown's side on anything, right? He's such a bird brain. But they didn't want to release him because they feared someone was going to pick him up. And Antonio Brown was like, all right, no, that's not okay. You can't do that. You can't, your butter on both sides. You're either going to play me, I'm still on the team, or I'm not. You know, they could have designated him for personal issues and injury reserve and all these other things that would have kept him. And that's when AB's people said, all right, you want to fight fire? We'll fight fire with fire. And now you watch all these allegations and all this other nonsense go away. Now the question is, will somebody pick him up, Joe? I think they will. I mean, I really do. I think that's where this ankle thing also is twofold. One, to get me off the Tampa Bay team officially, and two, to show other teams this was my excuse for acting like the way I did against the Jets. You know, I just didn't go into the game. It was because my ankle was hurting, and maybe I didn't convey the message to the head coach as good as I should have, but that's why. It's not just I quit on a team. I'm telling you, and nothing surprises me in the NFL. So I think he'll be on a football team by the end of the week. What are we, tomorrow?
They put out the break. I just got it on the phone right before we came out of break. And now it looks like it was pulled back, or maybe somebody reported it too soon. So we'll see. Keep an eye on the situation. I know that one of the Tampa Bay reporters that follows the team, obviously wherever they go, did say that the league office would not find Antonio Brown in any capacity. So that is out there. So we'll see what transpires over the next 24 hours regarding the situation in Tampa Bay. No line movement right now in terms of their matchup with Carolina. Still sitting pretty at 8 points on the FanDuel Sportsbook. We'll talk about Saturday's matchup. Big battle taking place in Mile High. It's a rematch of the last Monday night or a few Monday nights game where Kansas City dominated. That ball game is an 8.5 point favorite at home, won that matchup 22-6. They really contained Teddy Bridgewater, forced turnovers, had a pick six in that ball game. They're laying 10 on the road right here, right now. Total is set at 44.5, Scott, at minus 110 across the board. If you want to lay it with KC, you're going to lay 112 on FanDuel. Take a shot with Denver. They are plus 10 at minus 108. They're also plus 360 on the money line. I don't like that with Vic Fangio. I love the over in this game. I think 44.5 with Kansas City coming off the loss to Cincinnati and Joe Burrow. Those teams put up 65 points. If you're Kansas City, you got to say, let's try and outscore Drew Locke in this offense. I think they can do it. I'm going to go over 44.5.
Yeah, I don't go over in Denver games. They are so bad. They are predominantly an under team. So I'm going to stay away from that 12-4 under this year. With Drew Locke, boy, he just sucks, right? I mean, but I don't want to lay 10 to the Denver Broncos on the road. I won't do that either. No. You know, again, nobody wants to lose their last game. You know, they always give a gallant effort. I know it's Drew Locke. He does stink. No two ways about it. I don't think Bridgewater's going to play, right? So it's, but you want to lay 10? I can't do that. Back-to-back road games. I would take the Denver Broncos. I think, like I said earlier in the week, I think all these 10-point dogs and higher are all live this week. I really do. I think a lot of them are going to cover the spread, and I think you're going to get a couple of upsets, and I would not be surprised with Denver. I think Cincinnati, Joe, is going to rue not playing Joe Burrow because it's not that far-fetched for them to get the number one seed if everything fell the right way. And I think it's going to, and I think they're going to get plastered by the Cleveland, and they're going to sit back and say, wow, we could have been a number one seed. We could have had a bye. So, I think Denver has a good shot at winning this game.
Now, Brandon Allen, now to your point about double-digit underdogs, there's really not that many now. You have Houston, you have the Jets. Jets are now 16.5 against Buffalo. Houston, that beat Tennessee, same spread. It is amazing. They were catching 9.5, 10 in Nashville. They won that ballgame by 9, 22-13. Now at home, after Tennessee just abused Miami, they're laying 10, the same number. I mean, it's a little ironic, isn't it?
Yeah. I think Houston wins the game. That's one of my upsets this week.
That. I can't do that.
Let me tell you, the kid has played well at home, Davis Mills. You look at his number at home, and he's actually a real NFL quarterback. You know, he's atrocious on the road. I mean, I don't know. You know, he makes a deal with the devil at home. I don't know. You know, that great Houston Texans crowd of 15,000, you know, must cheer him on at home. But he does. They do play well at home. They've gotten a couple of nice performances out of him. And it would just be like Tennessee, right? I mean, they beat the Rams. They beat the Chiefs. They beat the Bills, and then they lose to the Jets, and they lose to the Texans, and I wouldn't be surprised if they lost to the Texans again. You know, they put up – they beat the Chargers at home, 41-29. You know, they stunk against Seattle, 33-13. But
that was a 10-10 game. That was a 10-10 game in the second quarter before Rashad Penny broke off over 100 yards rushing. I think he put on a .137 on that defense in the second half.
Yeah. Beat Tennessee. They did lose to the Jets 21-14 at home. But I don't know. I could just see Tennessee. It's a combination of Tennessee screwing up in the Texans' last home game. Why not? And like I said, last week at San Fran, that was a 7-3 game third quarter. I mean, they were in that game all the way through. They ended up losing by 16, but it wasn't a blowout from like start to finish, and San Fran just kind of turned off the dogs. No, that was a close game in the fourth quarter.
Well, think about Davis Mills. They invested a third-round selection on him. Okay, we know Deshaun Watson is not going to be in Houston next year, right? Whether the allegations are true or whether he moves on to another team. Is Davis Mills the savior of this franchise? I mean, the kid was good at Stanford. He wasn't elite. And you just mentioned he sucks on the road. Can they buy in the second year with Davis Mills at the helm? Or do they look for another quarterback? Or do they bring on a free agent? I mean, this organization really needs a kick in the ass in terms of how are you going to fill the seats? They don't have a polarizing player on the roster at all outside of Brandon Cooks. I mean, Who do you turn to rejuvenate this franchise right now?
I don't know. You know, in that third-round pick, Joe, that's not a throwaway fifth, sixth, seventh, and we'll take a flyer. Third-round pick is a pretty high pick to use on a quarterback who you really don't believe in, right? I mean, so could they possibly go into next year? I mean, they're going to have a top-five selection, right, or top two selection, three selection anyway. You know, Detroit, Jacksonville, and probably them, depending on how things pan out this weekend. So chances are they're going to get the pick of the litter, maybe the second quarterback, maybe Detroit will take a QB. I don't know. You know, third-round pick, like I said, I guess it's going to be Davis Mills. Unless they trade Deshaun Watson for a quarterback that, you know, is on a roster, i.e. Tua Tags or you know, some other team that they think has a quarterback that they're going to use. But you're not going to sell any tickets, I don't think, with Davis Mills as your starting quarterback next year. If you tell the people that in the offseason, right? I mean
hey, we got good news for you.
Yeah, good
news, bad news. We might be competitive at home, but our franchise and the face of the program is Davis Mills. Who? Davis Mills. He led an upset against Washington as a 13.5-point underdog in Palo Alto 2 years ago against Jake Eason and the Washington Huskies. That's his claim to fame in terms of Stanford. But at the end of the day,
not the Redskins, the Washington Huskies.
Right, the Washington Huskies before they got Jimmy Lake. But at the end of the day, Scott, I mean, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I can't back here. I thought Houston would cover against Trey Lance, but once it started to get overextended, 12.5, and then all of a sudden, right before kick, it was like 10-7. And you're like, all right, Houston from an in-game perspective was basically catching less than 10 points. You got to be saying, really? They're not that good. I mean, Houston's okay. They're competitive.
Right.
But they're not an elite team. They shouldn't be getting against any playoff caliber team. They should be catching at least 14 points because at the end of the day, they're going to get abused. The only teams that they could potentially play with are Jacksonville and the New York Jets. Outside of that, and maybe Tennessee because they didn't have Derrick Henry. Outside of that, they're not competitive against anybody. Although I will say, I'm going to go back on myself, they did go toe-to-toe with the New England Patriots. Remember, they were catching 9.5 in the middle of the season. They gave old Bill a run for his money back then.
Yeah, that might be the strangest score of any score in the NFL. I remember I had the Patriots in my survivor pool that week, and I'm thinking to myself, you got to be freaking kidding me. Bill Belichick is going to lose to a rookie quarterback. I mean, he made Davis Mills, the Patriots' defense, it made him look like he was John Elway there from Stanford. I mean, I couldn't believe it, right?
Rookie head coach, too. David Culley.
That's right. Yeah, rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback, and they were shocking. It's like a late comeback for the Patriots to win that game, man.
Unbelievable.
Crazy. Yeah, so I mean, listen, Tennessee should win. You're right. I mean, they really should. They, you know, they don't quite have as many wins as I thought when I'm looking at their schedule at home, but I just know they played a little bit better second half of the season.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. When we come back, we'll talk about the battle in Lincoln Financial, Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott, Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel right here on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
To Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel.
Great game Saturday night in Philly takes on Dallas and the Eagles. Big matchup. Remember last year, Scott, Sunday night game, Ben DiNucci got the start for the Cowboys in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah, remember that?
Remember that? It actually looked like he potentially could have covered that game. And then in the end, actually, Carson Wentz and the crew pulled that ball game out with about, I think it was about 5 minutes left after that offense could not move the football past the 50-yard line. They did ground and pound for much of the way. This line yesterday had Dallas as a 7-point favorite. It's down to 6 on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Total is set at 42 and a hook and minus 110 either way. Micah Parsons is on the COVID list, but reports are if he's fully vaxxed, he can come back in time to play, but most likely I would think he'd be out for the Dallas defense entering this ballgame. On the flip side, we have 12 players, including Goddard and Fletcher Cox, that are on the list for the Eagles. This is tough. I can only go Dallas here. I don't have enough confidence in Philadelphia. Anyway, going up against Dallas, I think they just it's a mismatch nightmare, even with the backups for both teams. Give me Dallas minus the 6 in this ballgame.
Yeah, you know, I've had this debate with people, and me and Dane talked about it last night. It just really goes to show how these teams just don't care. They don't analyze things like fans do, Joe. They really don't. I mean, if things fall the right way, you know, that's going to take something. But if they fell the right way, Dallas could be maybe as high as a number 2 seed. I'd have to figure out the tiebreakers because they're 11-5. Tampa Bay in the 3 spot is 12-4. The Rams are 12-4 in the 2 spot. Rams could very easily lose at home to San Fran. Tampa Bay is more than likely not going to lose to Carolina. But, you know, who knows with all the craziness that's going on with Tampa Bay. So, you know, Dallas is playing for a little something because they are 9-2 in conference play, and I'm thinking that's the next tiebreaker. So they theoretically would win a tiebreaker over the Bucs and the Rams. They could go to as high as a number 2 seed. So, I think they're going to take this game hopefully a little bit more seriously, but, you have to wonder because it is players. Philadelphia, meanwhile, is they're just playing for seedings. Would they rather face the Rams or the Bucs? It probably doesn't matter, right? What's the difference? Although I think I would rather stay away from Tampa Bay. But I like Dallas in the game. I think they're going to find a way to win after playing as poorly as they did this last week.
Well, FanDuel listens to the show. I know that. They just heard as we were talking, they simultaneously knocked down the line to Dallas as a 5-point favorite now. So what do they know that we don't? What do they know that we don't in regards to Philadelphia here? I mean, at the end of the day, yes, Jalen Hurts has stepped up. Jalen Hurts has led this team, you know, to a wild card, and he's done fantastic things with this organization. Granted, he did that with Alabama. The kid's a winner. But at the end of the day, I think we got to calm the expectations and calm, just the media hype surrounding the Philadelphia Eagles right now. Their defense still sucks, and I don't care that they stepped up against Garrett Gilbert a couple weeks ago, and they beat Washington 2 out of the last 3 weeks. There, you can run on them, you could throw on them. Just go back to the middle of the year when Pat Mahomes put up a 41 spot. That is the Philadelphia Eagles defense in a nutshell. And thinking that they're going to win a playoff game over the next few years, I don't see it. But we'll see what pans out in this matchup. I do like the total though, 42.5 Dallas Eagles. Prime time Saturday night? I mean, come on. I mean, this is, you're going to get at least maybe 48, 50 points in this ballgame, no?
Yeah, I was hoping you were going to go that direction. I like the over two, yeah. I don't bet unders in Philadelphia Eagle games. The defense is awful, and Hurts is good enough to scramble around and get a couple of touchdowns. I think as long as you get all the Cowboys to play this week, especially after they played so poorly this past week, I cannot believe that they would poo-poo this game. So I looked at last year's scores. I don't have the over-under records specifically, but out of the scores last year, there were some monster scores. So it went at least 8-8 last year to close out the regular season. So anyone thinking, point being that, it's last week and no one's going to be playing, don't think so. There were some crazy scores last year, 56-20-something within the Dolphin and Buffalo Bills game. So I think you will get points in a lot of these games. This is one of, especially right Saturday night, barring the weather's not crazy in Philadelphia, but otherwise I love the over in that one. That's a low total.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now, here's the thing with the totals. We've been trending, and I know you said there's 20 more unders this year than where we were at this point last year. But basically, over the last few weeks, it's been under city, baby. I mean, outside a few games, go back to last week. I mean, there were two games that I can remember that went over. It was the Cincinnati-KC game, and at 4 o'clock, the low total between Seattle and Detroit. Outside of that, every game, I believe, trended to the under, at least released at 4 o'clock, 18-10, New Orleans and Carolina. You had the under in San Francisco and Houston. I forget the other game that was at 4. And then the only game that basically in the 1 o'clock window that inched through the over was KC-Cincy. And the Jets, I think, got over by a point. Or was that total 51.5? And they just got it over by a half in that matchup on the last second touchdown by Tom Brady.
Right. Yeah, that one went over. Here's some scores last year, Joe. It's funny how these teams are all playing each other again. Tennessee beat the Texans 41-38. That was a bad Texans team, right? Seahawks 26-23 over San Fran. Not bad. That one probably went over. Chargers 38-21. Raiders 32-31. Packers 35-16. Bucks 44-27. Brownies over the Steelers. That one probably went over. 26-22. 56-26 Bills over our beloved Dolphins. So we did have, you know, I would lean, I know you're saying about the unders, but nobody plays defense in these final games. No one wants to make tackles. They all want to score. They always want to score. So they'll make the effort on offense. It's that defensive back who knows he's going to be sitting in Hawaii 2 weeks from now. Do I want to run up and make a tackle on a 220-pound running back with a full head of steam? I don't think so. You know, so that's why you get a lot of points, I think, in these meaningless games.
All right, to your point, let's go to the highest scoring games, the weekly specials on FanDuel.
Yeah,
we talked about it earlier, right? The Monday night battle between Raiders and Chargers with the playoffs on the line happens to be the favorite. Now, it is the highest total at 49.5. They're a 5-1 shot. Okay, right behind them happens to be the duel between potentially Kyler Murray in Arizona and Russell Wilson. They're 6-1. And then if you scroll all the way down, dead last is no surprise. Washington and that pitiful offense led by Freddie Kitchens and Joe Judge are 20-1. They wouldn't get a 10 cents of my money in that, in terms of the amount of aggravation in terms of back and overs against Joe Judge. I mean, come on. This guy's pathetic. I'm not going to bash him any more than I already have. But the one game that I actually like is the game that we talked about earlier between New Orleans and Atlanta. It's in the dome, right? New Orleans, they're the better team. I think they want to find a little consistency. Sean Payton wants to see what he has for 2022. 16-1. Would you take a flyer on that game? Total is 40.
Nah, I can't do that. The Saints offense is just so bad. I if I'm going to go a little flyer on one, it would be one notch above that. And that would be Tennessee and Houston at 12-1. As I've been saying with this Texans team, at home, Davis Mills isn't too bad. Put up 41 against Los Angeles. Only 13 against Seattle, but 14 against New York. But 22 against Los Angeles, 22 against the Patriots. You know, if I can get 20 points out of them and maybe, 30-40 out of Tennessee, then I'm in that 60 range. You know, I'm striving for 70, but I don't know if we're going to get it, unless something crazy happens. I think you can get 60 out of Tennessee and Houston this weekend. So that one's the one.
Maybe we could do deductive reasoning and cross off and then come to like a core of like five games. Well, think about this. Do you have any? All right, so the Chargers and Raiders, the favorite never wins in these type of situations, does it? It's money.
So they're out. So much on the line. Yeah, so they'll be
they're out.
Yeah, they're out.
Trevor Lawrence, I mean, what game did he throw for over 200 against the Jets? He finally got over 200. He sucks, even though I like Jacksonville. They're catching 16.5. You got to believe that Indianapolis is going to try and wear them down with a rushing attack, right? Yeah. So there's no way that that's going to be the highest scoring game in week number 18. So I think we could throw out the Indianapolis-Jacksonville game at 10-1. Matt Nagy and Zimmer, are we kidding ourselves there? I mean, both coaches suck. That ain't happening. The one I think we can put into the mix is the Jets and Buffalo. I think that Buffalo and Josh Allen, the fact that they played rope-a-dope with Atlanta, divisional game. You said Zach Wilson and the offense put up points against Tampa Bay. I mean, I still think that Buffalo is good for like 35, 40 points in this ballgame.
Yeah. That I would like think that. For sure. And you got the Jets on offense playing a little bit better, right? I mean, they were able to score against Tampa Bay. albeit at home. You'd think they would be able to put up, you know, 17, 20 plus against Buffalo, right? I mean, if the Falcons were able to move the football against the Bills,
right?
That one's not bad.
All right, so throw that into the mix. Cincinnati and Cleveland, we have Brandon Allen and Case Keenum going to be probably cold weather in terms of Cleveland there, right? So that's a detriment. Are both teams going to be all amped up? It's a divisional game. We get that. But are they going to be the highest scoring game for Week 18? Most likely not with backups playing in this matchup. It's on grass. They want to run the football. Can you see Stefanski going back to the run with Keenum here?
It's 41-16, first time they met. They do play high-scoring games, but you are dealing with not one but two backup quarterbacks. So if you're aiming to get 60, I don't, you know, which is the goal here, I don't think they're going to combine for 60 points, the backups.
Yeah. Okay, and we talked about Green Bay being up. This line now jumped from 2.5 up to 3.5. Detroit playing a little bit better. We have a backup quarterback, Tim Boyle, Jordan Love. What do you think?
Yeah, that's not happening. That's
no?
No. Nah,
inside the dome?
Nah. Right. Tim Boyle blows. I'm anti-Boyle now. I just don't ask why, but I'm anti-Boyle.
No, Scott, he's progressing. They
yeah,
played an over last.
Yeah,
they played an over. I mean, that total against Seattle was 41. They blew right through that total last week in the 4 o'clock window. It was amazing how they just ripped right through the Detroit defense in that ballgame. Carolina and Tom Brady. You got to think Brady's pissed, right? In terms of the AB situation.
Yeah.
Do they step up here and tack it on?
You know, I'm going to say no because we saw them without weapons against the New Orleans Saints a couple of weeks ago, and they were awful. So I don't think you're going to get much out of Carolina either. So I don't think you're going to get a high-scoring game there.
Okay, and then the other two that we have to talk, Pitt and Baltimore. No Deontay Johnson. Baltimore likes to run. And then, obviously, New England-Miami.
Yeah. Maybe, man, Patriots would put up 50. Would they be able to put up 50 back-to-back? Are you going to get any effort out of the Dolphins? Probably not because it's Belichick, and I don't think he'd run up the score. I'm Brian Flores, former head coach. He actually liked Flores. He agreed, you know, gave him the goodwill gesture of go ahead, take this dopey Dolphins job. So I don't, and Tua sucks. So I don't think you'd get it there.
Okay, so we have three games. Ready? Tennessee-Houston.
Yep.
That is a 12-1 shot. New Orleans, Atlanta, 16-1, and New York, Buffalo, 11-1. Money, put it on the wood, right there. Money in the bank, Scotty.
I'm going, yo. 18. I think it's Buffalo Jets. I think Buffalo's going to put 40 on the board.
All right, we'll mark it down, and we'll see which team comes through or which game comes through this coming Saturday and Sunday. When we return, we'll wrap it up. Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel right here on the grid. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel.
Wrapping up today's show, we just looked at the highest scoring game on FanDuel. Scott and I gave you three picks: Tennessee, Houston, New Orleans, Atlanta, New York, and the Buffalo Bills. They have lowest scoring, Scott, and I did find it ironic that Washington and the New York Giants are not the first pick. It is Cincinnati and Cleveland. Can you believe that?
Really?
At 5-1. Which is shocking, isn't it? I mean, because Case Keenum, Brandon Allen, I mean, you still have playmakers on both sides, right? I mean, you think about Washington and the New York Giants. I mean, Giants, 24 passing yards last week. And we know what we have with Washington is all of a sudden Freddie Kitchen's going to come to an enlightenment and all of a sudden throw it 60 times in this ballgame. You look at some of the others. They do have New Orleans, Atlanta as plus 750. They have the Patriots and Dolphins at 7-1. And then the last one on the list is L.A., the Chargers, and Raiders. I mean, the book really believes that's going to be the highest scoring game for week number 18 with the playoffs on the line.
You know, I tell you, I could see that one being a low-scoring game. You know, the Raiders and Colts, the defense for the Raiders have played very well. I could see two teams with two rookie head coaches, one an interim head coach, life on the line, being real conservative. You know, I know they got a lot of weapons, but do they really have that many weapons? I mean, you know, I could see that one being like 17-14, not necessarily a shootout with so much on the line. And then, God forbid, if you should actually get that loss, that would allowing both the Chargers and Raiders to get in if they finished in a tie, and then you'd really be in luck because then you could have two teams that would be really super conservative. So I'm at 32-1. I put a couple of shekels on that one. I don't think it's that crazy. But that would
no, I agree
story.
With you. I mean, 28-14 was the first game dead under in terms of that matchup. They had the total set at 48.5 in that Monday night game for Scott Wetzel. Our great producer, Andrew Torres. I'm Joe Lisi. We'll see you tomorrow for NFL Action Week number 18. Have a great day. Enjoy the game.